Good afternoon, PGA DFS fans, as we bring you in on a little piano music there. Nothing like it, in my opinion. Nothing like the 3M Open either. That's where we're heading this week, TPC Twin Cities. And I know it may be a week after a major, and maybe a little hard to get that excited for it, Ben, but then you see that there's $200,000 going to first place, you know, over on DraftKings, a couple big contests over on FanDuel, and you get a little more excited. Then, of course, if you're looking to diversify your portfolio, well, that's where we're going to turn you over to Monkey Knife Fight, the sponsor of our show. Their player props-based contest, well, they're a little bit different than the other ones that I mentioned. You don't have to worry about ownership or worrying about getting six golfers right. Nope, you're just going to look at their prop. You're going to pick the side that you want, pick your entry fee, and there you have it. They will give you how much you're going to win on that if you do hit the player prop. So, Ben, I've got a good one here this week. I've got two. The Eagle Eye one. I'm going to talk about that in a second. And then, of course, a round one little pick there, a little prop. And I'm going to be fading a couple of big-name guys this week. So let's start with my round one prop, Ben. And that's Louis Oosthuizen and Patrick Reed. Both of them, well, I think Louis exhausted a lot of energy there last week. And he hasn't performed well, kind of like a Brooks Koepka, a mini version of Brooks Koepka, if you will, in regular events, just a couple of top 10s this year in 10 or so events. So I've got him scoring under 25.5 fantasy points. Got him. The other guy in this bucket is Patrick Reed. This is just for round one. So I wanted to let you choose Reed. Do you think he's able to bounce back after a miscut like we've seen three times this year? Or do you think he's in maybe a little spot of bad form? And what do you think for round one? 25.5 fantasy points scored is the mark. And for the scoring, 5 for an eagle, 3 for a birdie, 1 for a par.
It's a little tricky. I think Reed's certainly between the two, probably more live to just start fast and have a good tournament. It's nothing against Usti. It's a tough ask. I mean, again, he's been so close, and now you fly across the world that kind of to go to Minnesota for the 3M. I'm stunned that Louis's in the field, to be honest. Reed has shown, you mentioned it, you kind of alluded already. Every time he misses a cut, I mean, his last couple, missed cut 6th, missed cut 5th. Seems to bounce back pretty quickly. Have a feeling we kind of see that rinse and repeat once again this week.
So there, if you want to do that, you can take the low on Oosthuizen over the last 25 points, the over on Patrick Reed. That's going to get you a 3X payout. That's a good one there. And now the second one is the Eagle Eye contest. This is the weekly contest that Monkey Knife Fight runs. You get to pick any 3 golfers in the field, then a specific number of eagles or better, of course. And this week I just did 2.5 because at 2.5, you're going to get a 3X payout plus be entered into that Eagle Eye contest pool of $2,500. And 3 guys I picked, Ben: Tony Finau, Matthew Wolf, and Dustin Johnson. Now, if DJ plays all 4 days and doesn't withdraw on us, you got to think he's a candidate for getting that. Seems to be coming into some form with the decent play last week. Tony Finau, same thing. And Matthew Wolf, he's kind of the guy that is absolute boom or bust per hole. So those are 3 guys I choose. Would you like to choose any different ones? Again, 2.5 eagles or more is our target.
I mean, you got 3 good ones there, guys that can take advantage of these. I'll throw Bubba in, as I always do with some of these. He's another guy who could be very, very aggressive, be a little different. But I'm not going to push back on any of those guys, particularly Wolf. He's always the wild card, but when he's on, he's almost first. He's the guy that scores more than anyone in terms of being aggressive, taking advantage. And I think we all know, as we dive into this, he's more comfortable at these type of events, I think, than, you know, where you're really methodically grinding it out. His when he's full go, he's one of the more volatile, aggressive scorers out there.
And listen, he's picking his spots right now. Did not go over to the Open last week. Knows that maybe his game isn't ready. But clearly he knows this course and feels like his game, where it is, sets up well for it. So, again, I like that. Another just quick note as we transition into TPC Twin Cities. This is the 3rd showing of this event. In the first year, 52 eagles. 2nd year, 39 eagles. So, Ben, another reason why I like that contest this week. Just a lot of eagle opportunities out there. It's a par 71, measures 7,400 yards. I think, though, maybe it was last year or the first year, like a par 3 became a drivable par 4 for one round. You recall something like that happening?
Yeah. So I think I remember something with like Gary Woodland like that. They were just like, oh, it's a par 4 now. So it was a weird situation. Overall, I think that this will be pretty scoreable. There's a lot of water, but unless you really do something stupid, a lot of it is more, I don't know. I don't want to say scenic, but I don't think all the water is that dangerous. Some of it is definitely, but a lot of it, unless you really do something stupid, it's not going to come into play for these guys.
Obviously a TPC course. That doesn't mean all TPCs are alike, but there have been a couple of comparisons to how it's kind of set up to TPC Sawgrass. I guess it's a similar type course. I'm not going to say identical by any stretch, but it seems like off the tee is a strength here. It can be utilized. You look at the first year winners, you know, with DeChambeau and Wolf, obviously that's a strength of their game, but elite ball strikers or guys that have an elite ball striking week can also get it done. Morikawa, obviously in 2019, and Michael Thompson, I don't mean to say elite ball strikers, but when Michael Thompson plays well, that's what he does well. So certainly a first and second shot golf course. Would you agree with that?
Oh, no doubt about it. And you know, you can be aggressive off these tees. It'll shorten some of the long iron shots, which are prevalent here. But if you lay back, certainly driving accuracy is important. You can't be spraying all over the place. You will get punished. And Michael Thompson is an example. We've seen success in Florida with him. And I think that's somewhere where you can look. There's a risk reward factor, and you need to kind of know when to, I think, be aggressive on these tees. You certainly don't have to be. Going to need to score, got to roll it, but we know that with every golfer. So I'm with you. I think I'm going to look at some of those corollaries and see what we can come up with this year.
Yeah, and for sure. 20 under winner, I think, is probably to be expected. Yeah. You know, it played a little bit harder last year, which is good. You know, you want to see maybe a couple of bogey opportunities to go on. So let's go ahead and move into talk about some of the golfers that are going to be teeing it up here this week, or a little bit more in depth, if you will. But before we do, I always let you guys know about the free premium tools we got going on here today at Awesomo. A little peek behind the curtain for PGA. You're going to get the golfer rankings, a nice tool to just go and see how we're ranking the golfers based off their projections. For MLB, you get the player projections. And of course, game 7 tonight, you're going to get showdown single game player projections for that. Big one tonight. I know we'll have the boys on. I saw Laffy and Josh are going to be on tonight, 8 o'clock for the NBA before lock. And then they're going to be on after lock as well, sweating the game in the first little bit. So that'll be fun to watch tonight. Now, 156 players, about 25 in the top 100 and about 23 that played last week. So I want to get it right out of the way. Are you worried about any type of lag over from those guys? Or do you think that the fact that the conditions were actually quite ripe and easy last week, maybe they didn't expend a lot of mental energy that typically comes with a major?
Yeah, well, as you can see, if anyone looked at what I was saying last week, obviously I thought it was going to play a little different than just in a pure iron fest, and it wasn't a grind, really. The wind was not a factor
at all. It was 80 degrees and sunny. Yeah, like
Griot is, when Griot is doing things at the Open, you know that it's not windy.
Hey, how about Griot, though? In the Millie Maker winning lineup, like such a key pace. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think a lot of things. We don't have enough time in the show for that. But listen, coming back, is it ideal? No, but you also have to realize every player that's coming back, they made it in the Open Championship. The other guys, they were here because they weren't good enough on the whole to be in the majors. So you're getting the cream of the crop. You're getting most of the talent in this field flying back. I don't think it's a huge deal. I do think for specific guys, particularly Usti, I hate to single him out, but I think that's just a really tough spot. He once again was in the hunt. He's played a lot of golf. He hasn't performed nearly as good in these events as you talked about. And now he's almost $11,000. So I worry about him a little more, but no, Finau, Reed, Sergio types, not going to really factor it in.
Now, how about a couple of golfers that are playing next week in Tokyo, or at least scheduled to at this point?
So that's the other, it's kind of a weird sandwich spot. You've got some guys looking ahead, some guys, I think I'll say this, if it was really important, not to rip on the 3M, but like, don't you think?
No, they they'd be there though.
They would.
I mean, they would already be in Tokyo, right? I mean, and there's two names, Jonathan Vegas, who, you know, maybe isn't secured in a spot for his job next year, has gone on a good run, but you know, he's nearish that 125 number. And Mito Pereira is the other one where he's kind of just getting onto tour. So maybe it makes a little sense why they're here and not over there yet.
No. And I think, again, that's just what goes down to, not to speak for them, obviously, but to priorities. Like, they have a lot to accomplish in the 3M. Now, if, you know, the South
Justin Thomas,
like Justin Thomas, players that really maybe aren't going to have a life-changing situation at the 3M. Maybe they head to Tokyo a little early and kind of instead of flying all over the place. So I think if you're here, you're pretty focused. I'm not going to worry too much about that because if it was a huge deal, I truly believe that maybe they would have kept this off the schedule.
I totally agree there, 100%. So, all right, now we're going to get into a little bit of building and selection. Just a couple of notes that I want to mention. And, of course, it is the 3M Open, if you will. So a lot of building materials, tape, and all the like coming from them. So that's going to be our theme today. But one thing I want to mention, the chalk in the $200 single entry in most single entries get a lot chalkier. Also, Ben, I've noticed that the higher projected players, if you use sets of projections, well, those golfers tend to get higher owned in the higher stakes contest. So with all of that, is there anything that you want to try and leverage specifically this week? Now, we just had ownership run, you know, a couple of hours ago, but a couple of the names that are up there, you know, say like Dustin Johnson's up there, Hank Lebioda, we know these guys probably are going to be even more targeted in that single entry. Are you apt to fade any of them this week?
So, yeah, I think it's one of the situations, and we've seen this all year, you know, you can't just be fading chalk because they're chalk. But at the same time, there is an element where you're going to have to create leverage. And that's where I think correlation and pairing up guys is really important. Lebioda, it's all been the putter. I mean, I'm sure the results are somewhere in the middle. He couldn't putt at all. He lost strokes putting in 7 of 9. And then he's gained in 5 straight now, and it's been big. He's gained 5 or more strokes gained putting in 3 straight events. That's ridiculous. So do I feel like maybe there's some regression coming? Absolutely. Is it going to be this week? Who the hell knows? But more often than not, even though you get weeks like last week where a lot of the chalk came through, I still long-term do believe that some of these very popular guys, particularly in single entry, will be overvalued.
Me too. Totally agree. Now let's talk about, you know, some of the tape, if you will. Now we always need tape when you're doing some construction projects, and these are going to be golfers that now we don't need a ton of them. So these are going to be the golfers that are what I'd call the favorites this week. And the first question I want to ask you, we had Dustin Johnson withdraw after what, about 16 holes last year, maybe even shorter than that. We have Louis Oosthuizen, who's known to withdraw from events that aren't majors. And even sometimes I think he withdrew from a major once. So first question, do we get a big withdrawal this week? And is it anyone other than Louis Oosthuizen if it is? Like, is DJ going to back-to-back withdraw on us?
Nah, he'll be all right. Yeah, I mean, Louis the always, and he, I can confirm, he's withdrawn before a major. Believe me, I was there, had it. Very, very bad PGA.
Sorry to hear that.
It, you know, it comes to the territory. I really believe that that's something, although it's very frustrating, although you see it every time it happens on Twitter, there's nothing you can really do. Even with Louis, I don't like him on just a lot of the things I think are warranted. I'm not really worried about the withdrawal. If Louis did, I wouldn't be. I'd say, oh, that's Louis, like Jason Day style. But all in all, if you're here, if you've made the trip, I assume you're ready to go, and we'll get 4 rounds from you.
Tony Finau has been very confusing and maybe even a tad frustrating on my end this year. But last week, I mean, a T15 was never part of the picture, really. But at $8,400, if you had somehow moved off of Patrick Reed or Patrick Cantlay to Tony Finau, he provided you some really good value in that sense. So 76% of his greens, 62.5% of his fairways in regulation, terrible putting. Sounds like Tony Finau is back. Is that not what we want this week?
It looks
maybe good. Not the terrible putting part, but
wow. But you know what? Tony Finau was, you know, look at the, and I hate to just look at a single year, but he was firmly in contention last year here at the 3M, gained 10 strokes on the approach, was about even with the putter. So he showed, you don't have to gain a million strokes putting. It always makes it easier, but he was right in the thick of it last year with moderate putting. So coming off that, it looked like he did find something. I didn't particularly like him last week at the Open. I was kind of indifferent. I thought 15th was a good showing for him coming off a pair of missed cuts.
So 10,700, is the price too steep, or is he somebody you're targeting to, you know, start your lineups with?
I think I'm going to target him. You know, this week, the more, I haven't built yet, of course, it's just Tuesday afternoon, but from what I've seen, I have a feeling that salary is not going to be a huge detriment. I'll probably have some lineups that have, you know, some money left over, because there's just so many guys in the low 7s, 6s that are capable in fields like this. So I probably will start some teams with Finau. It's a little scary to omit DJ, of course, but listen, it's golf. Tony Finau, I think, is primed for a good showing at a course he clearly likes.
Do you think that the field is too top-heavy to put both of them in your lineup this week?
Oh, boy. That's going to be tricky.
We're going to rely on Norman Jeong to make the cut here to do that.
Quade Cummings. There are some names down here. I don't know. That's going to be tricky. I think if you do that, you know, you're looking at a totally different build, but at the same time, there's enough guys in the sixes that are, you know, PGA Tour regulars. You can do that. I don't think it's my preferred build in single entry, but in you're saying 200K up top. I may have some double north of 10K this week. Yeah.
Is Patrick Reed, we mentioned him. We already alluded to the kind of miscut afterwards factor, but is 10,300 too much even for the good record after a miscut?
I don't love the price. This is one where I'm going to lean on our premium tools. If the ownership checks out, if the top golfers tool, which is one of my favorites that you and Alex, the whole team do a great job on, I think I might get to him in a pretty easy capacity. I don't want to allocate 30%, 40% on Patrick Reed this week. I think that's a little much, but if I can get 20% and get some leverage, I have no problem. Reed has responded. He grinds. I was very disappointed last week. I thought that he was, again, I built for wind. It was not windy. One of my many mistakes, but I think Reed will bounce back and be just fine this week.
I do too, but when you say fine for a guy that's 10,300, that's where I kind of struggle, right? Where I could go $400 cheaper and get Sergio Garcia, who quietly has put together a good stretch of golf, four straight top 20s. But in addition to that, he's scoring really well. I mean, he put up, I think I just saw the stat, 18 birdies last week at the Open Championship, 21 birdies the week before that, 15 at the US Open. So it's going pretty well right now. I think I'd rather go start with Sergio. Is that a fair assumption, or are you leaning Reed over Sergio this week?
I bet Sergio. I'll say that. I like Sergio more as a bet. 35-1, I thought that was a little much, and I just keep going back to this. At Sanderson Farms, when he won in November of 2020, he gained 2.8 strokes putting. He had lost strokes putting 9 straight events before that. 9 straight. So it can flip. It can happen. And when Sergio putts, the ball striking is there. So I do think that he's a very reasonable sub 10K target. Obviously 9,900, he's basically 10K. Reed to me is still safer just because he grinds a little more and he obviously can putt worlds better, even if the ball striking isn't up to Sergio's standards. But I have no problem even paying this tag for Sergio. You have mentioned the form in stronger fields than this has been coming around.
Stacking him with Finau or Johnson is a little bit easier, obviously, than stacking them together, but it does leave about 7,300 per player, which there are a lot of names there that we will certainly get to that we like. But maybe a little bit more balanced way to do it is maybe even go down to, say, Matthew Wolf or the next two guys I want to talk about. Cam Tringale, instantly, when the odds came out and the salaries came out, was probably the first question mark. Griot sitting right behind him. And Ben, we kind of alluded to the conditions being absolutely perfect for Griot last week. The 9,300 probably warranted. We've seen him up here. However, is this a course we want to attack either of these players on?
I'll take Tringale first. I don't mind it. It kind of feels cashy, but at the same time, I don't love the price. That's my biggest problem. Like, is he your second man in and you're very aggressive up top? Is he your first man in? I think that's a little thin when you can bump up to guys like Sergio and Finau and players like that. So
almost Wolf even too for the win equity there. Yeah.
Yeah. I just, where does he fall? Like, what kind of build is that? So to me, I don't really have a ton of use there. Griot's a little more tricky in the sense that I just so expected him to miss the cut last week because I don't think he's built for opens. Seeing him come in 12th, it's a little weird just to see he was playing pretty poorly going into that. Now he comes to a course that I think he should and has shown that he likes. I have no problem with him. I'm going to play Griot as I always do. It's just a matter of can he make, like Sergio, he's got to make birdies because you can't just grind it out here.
I need to do a little bit more research on it, but it seems like courses that are under 7,200 yards are like right around there seems to be his sweet spot. And the fact that he could legitimately just put it out there, hit 6 or 7 iron into the longer par fours and have some wedges with no wind, you know, it's probably his best chance at an open. And he did. He putt well. The green speeds were a 10. All of those factors, I think, contributed to helping. I think, you know, I know he's your guy. I think we're in a little bit of a letdown spot this week. I would rather go up to a Matthew Wolf or even Sergio Garcia in this range. I'm not going to say I'm fading Grillo, but I think he's probably, of the guys that we've mentioned so far, he's probably my least favorite play. Tringale, I kind of feel the same way as you, though. At 9,500, if he's your second guy in, we really want to go there. You know, he's kind of a top 15, 20 guy. I don't know if we're going to get a win anytime soon. At 9,500, you want some win equity. Speaking of win equity, Cam Davis, is he back in play for you this week?
I think if I'm going to go very aggressive off the tee, you know, maybe omit some accuracy, which is not my preferred build. I don't mind it. He's someone, it was weird, at John Deere, I thought that he was actually primed to keep it going a little. And at times he did. And then he really kind of progressed, fatigued. I don't know what it was. Didn't have a good showing there, ultimately 55th after the win. He's a good scorer, but you know, the appeal of Cam Davis in a lot of regard was that you could play him in the mid range. He could make a cut and outscore his placement. When you're talking about mid 9K players, that's not really a formula for success because you need placement points. It's very difficult to get there. So I'm kind of indifferent from him, but at the same time at 92, I'm not sure I'm going to have a ton of room for guys like Davis this week.
Yeah, one of we'll talk about Bubba Watson after. I want to talk about a interesting debate. Bobby McIntyre, he sits at $9,000. And I wanted to ask you, he's a guy that plays most of his golf on the European Tour. We don't have too many stats on him on the PGA Tour. So projection-based systems that take into account the statistical measures from the PGA Tour are not going to have this guy rated anywhere close to the top. But when you look at his recent form, he's played pretty darn good. Most of it on the European Tour, granted, last week came in the top 10. So how do you view these projections versus recent form debates? Because this is probably the hottest one this week. We saw it a couple of weeks ago with Guido Migliozzi at the Travelers. However, a huge difference is there's a $1,700 price difference. McIntyre is $9,000. We need a top 10 to get paid on him this week.
This is a really tricky situation. And we've seen this time and time again, you know, with guys, ton of success in Europe, start to make the transition over and it's tough.
Get a little murky. Yeah.
It's really tough. You know, the EVRs of the world, and Bobby Mack is a good player. We've seen it, but I feel like a lot of times we see him more at more grinded out opens, US opens. Now the fields are much stronger. I'm interested to see him at an event like this. We really haven't seen outside of majors and WGCs. He played in the Heritage and he was 59th. He played at API and he was 36th. I don't think I'm going to pay 9K for him. If that burns me, so be it. I just think that really with incomplete data, riding high, there's a lot of PGA Tour regulars I'd rather play.
Yeah, I think so. And maybe we look back a year from now and we say, hey, you know what? Bobby Mack, 9,000, that's his price in this field. And he's shown us that. Or we look back and say, it's another Eric Van Rooyen struggling to make cuts on the PGA Tour. However, I think that of the golf I've watched between these two, I think McIntyre has much more potential than, say, somebody like Van Rooyen. But there have been plenty, Ben, other than just Van Rooyen, that have come over here and struggled. Lucas Bjerregaard is another one. Even Matt Fitzpatrick hasn't been all that good in normal PGA Tour events. So plenty of good examples to use. And of course, there are a couple of other examples on the other side where golfers have come over and kind of got it done. So I am too excited to see Bobby Mack. I think it could be a good course for him. And of course, I like his personality. Now, Bubba Watson, another lefty that's teed it up this week, caught COVID, unfortunately, or maybe didn't even catch COVID, but due to the rules of the RNA last week, couldn't play, but hasn't really been in form except for the Travelers 3 rounds there and obviously lost it on Sunday. 9,100 seems a little steep for Bubba this week.
It's definitely steep. There's no doubt about it. As a tournament play, I don't mind it just because Bubba can, when Bubba gets going, he can win, obviously. And at Travelers, you know, he melted down. He was firmly in that tournament. At times the favorite on Sunday. So I don't mind it in a range with minimal opportunity costs, you know, bumping down to the eights. There's a lot of guys. Chat mentioned Fratelli. He's another guy that's kind of done at times very successful, the transition. At other times he's lost his form. Looked good last week. Don't mind that. Price seems reasonable, but you've got like I mean, Ricky, what do you say about Ricky here? 89, looked good on Sunday, looked horrible overall, but he did make the cut if you're trying to take glass half full approach.
Yeah, for sure. And Ricky kind of starts off the next next section here, the materials, which is kind of how all of our lineups are made, of course, and using the 3M little strategy there going with it. Fowler squeaked through the cut, Ben. He didn't make it. He squeaked through, played bad on Saturday, and finally found something on Sunday. So is that what he takes over to this week? At 8,900, we haven't seen him break out of what we would call a long-term funk. I mean, we've thrown in a top 10 at the PGA, which was great. The play is getting better, but I think at 8,900, I don't know. I think I'd rather go up $100 and play Bobby Mack. That's my struggle this week with Fowler. I think Bobby Mack's in a better place, so struggling to play him.
It's fair. Yeah, I mean, I definitely would lean Ricky over Bobby Mack, but then you've got guys like Keegan, if you want a good driver of the ball who really can't putt. And then it starts to open up. It's a fascinating range with like Lucas Hebert, Maverick is there. You've got a couple South Africans. Luke List from the clouds. Once I gave up on him, I mean,
from the clouds.
Like, or what? Now he's playing good golf again. I mean, just the Barbasol, by the way. Schwartzel
playing good again. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Talk about just, the Barbasol.
No, I mean, what's there to say? Just Seamus. It's an incredible that he finally breaks through and we can't take advantage of it.
Yeah, he's like 35% owned as, you know, a tournament
favorite. And I didn't bet him, obviously. Ugh, that one stung.
Glad for Seamus he did withdraw from this week to go probably celebrate, I would
Enjoy
assume.
Yourself.
So let's talk about Lucas Hebert. He's one of the first ones you mentioned here. Running into the Open had some of the best form. In fact, was one of probably the mistakes going him over Kevin Streelman, who Streelman had been performing in majors, and Streelman had a bad Sunday, so it made it sting a little bit less. But when a guy's staring you in the face at the same price, you know, that you also somewhat like, it stings a little bit. Now $1,700 more after the miscut, I'm out. I would rather play McNealy, who's on a great run of golf, or List, like you said, who's on a great run of golf. Even Dylan Fratelli, who he was in our featured groups in the John Deere Classic, so we get to watch him. And for me, I saw that he looked a lot better than what the results have been showing. Now, did I play him at the Open and cash in on the top five? Heck no, I didn't. We all know that. But there were good signs. I'm not saying it's going to continue this week, but it is a good course setup for him. He's a heavy driver of the ball, not great with his irons, but he showed something last week where it's coming around.
Yeah, Fratelli is the type of guy. He's got a lot of him and Tom Lewis remind me. They can just turn it on randomly, and when they do, they can win out of nowhere. And we've seen that with Fratelli. And then we've seen him miss 6, 8, 10 out of 12 cuts, something like that. Just miserable. Maverick, probably my preferred target overall in this range. Combination of makes his putts, really playing solid quality golf. He's got experience. Lucas Hebert, it's very difficult to tell. He's shown that he can do it. But he's also missed the cut at Corrales. He's missed the cut at several attempts over here. I have Maverick over him. I have Luke List over these guys.
Me too.
Woodland, I don't know what to do with. That's a tricky one for me. Another miscut at the Open. I don't think that was the best setup anyway, but it's still disappointing.
He's incredibly inconsistent. Is he long-term one of the best players in this field, or especially in this range? Definitely in this range. But right now, I would rather play Hank Leviota because I know he can actually make a putt. And I think I'd rather play Doug Gim, who's a guy that is not missing many greens right now, Ben. And if he catches hot with the putter, it's going to be a breakout. He's had a really good season. He's, you know, easily inside the top 125. I like the setup for both of these guys at 7,900.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Doug Gim, I think, is more built for this type of golf and doing some things, getting better with each start. Lebiota's Lebiota. We talked about at the beginning. You're paying for a lot of implied putting right now, a lot of implied ownership. To me, I'd rather pivot to like Sneds blindly. Chat just brought up CH3, who did make a cut at John Deere. It was mostly putting, but he seems to like this course. I have no problem with that. He's not a priority, but I don't think this range for me is going to have priorities. It's just going to be a lot of guys that I'm hoping can just be that third or fourth man in.
Bouncing back up to the top, you got Patton Kizzire, who, if this guy just gets to the weekend, puts up eagles, birdie streaks, double bogeys, triple bogeys. It doesn't matter. He puts up every score on the board. I like him over Stewart, who sank last week.
So do I. I mean, Pat Gesire, he's a difficult one because I think his missed cut equity is higher than I'd want for the mid-age because he can't drive the ball. And when there's so much water, you know, he's the type of guy, if you play him, you may wake up and he might be six over through 10 holes and you're just like, what am I doing? Happened.
Yeah. Why did I roster this guy?
He basically is automatic with the putter. And if you get four rounds, you're going to get streaks. You're going to get bonuses. You're going to get scoring. And that is an appealing target, particularly for tournaments.
Yeah. What was it? 2 weeks ago, he came in, you know, what I think a T18 or something like that and put up over 100 points. It's kind of just what he does. Yeah. The John Deere T11 and he put up 109 points. Rocket Mortgage T25 and put up 90. It's just what he does. But prior to that, three straight missed cuts. It's what you're going to get with him. Very volatile. Good GPP target in my place. He wouldn't make a first lineup or a single entry lineup or my highest dollar, but certainly in this range, I like him as a GPP play for absolute short. Definitely over Stewart Cink. So in this range, we mentioned McNealy, Fratelli, even Charles, Luke List. You can even go down to Doug Gim, Lebiota. Give me your top two on the board that you want to roster in your lineup, pairing with Finau or Johnson or even, say, with Garcia.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how the build's going to look. Ricky's the one I'm still undetermined on what I want to do, but Maverick, all things being equal, is the guy that I think grades out the best.
Okay.
Then it's probably Luke List, who I do think that, particularly if we don't get windy conditions, I don't see any reason we would. It's just so bad with the putter. It's so frustrating, but we've seen time and time again, just keep it neutral. His last two starts, ridiculous tee to green. John Deere, plus 10.1 tee to green. Barbasol, plus 12.7. I don't care where you're playing. If you're putting up stuff like that, that's going to get my attention.
For sure. Now, a little peek behind the curtain here on our Osmo projections that you can go and check, of course, if you're an Osmo Plus member. And if you're not, join us. Just $8.95 for the week. And, of course, if you want to join all the sports that we got, I just mentioned MLB's coming on at 4:45 and then the NBA tonight. PGA Strategy Show is the promo code. It's going to give you 25% off your first Platinum Pass weekly there. So check that out. And here it is, Gary Woodland, Ben. He's the top projection under 8,000. And I'm going to give you a dark horse, a great transition to talk about, a guy that you and I like to play at the beginning of the year. Number two golfer, under 8,500 in our points projection, Lanto Griffin. He's coming in at 7,700 this week. Showed signs, easily breezed through the cut at the Open last week. So what do you make of Lanto Griffin at this course that it's a 20 underscoring expectation?
Yeah, Lanto's been a weird evaluation because he was always a notoriously good putter. Then he really found some tee to green game, and the putting regressed a bit. He missed four or five cuts. Now he's made four straight, and I think he's starting to find that form again. The price hasn't caught up. I feel good about it. I think that Lanto is in a reasonable price tag. He's competing against CH3, JT Poston, Mito, Patrick Rogers. I think that he is more than warranted to get it done amongst that group. And he has more of a well-rounded game than most of that group.
One of the guys that went backwards on round two at the Open, and there were plenty of them. We already mentioned Stewart Cink. Chris Kirk was one of them, 68 in round one, two under, firmly inside, then a 74, four over, pushed him on the number at two over on the outside. I'm going to group him with two guys that are coming off their best performances of the year, JT Poston and Ryan Moore. So of those three guys, you know, kind of coming in all different mentalities, who do you like the best? And are you playing any of them? You might just say, hey, JT Poston, but I'm not really playing. Or maybe these guys are part
who's
of your
course. Who's the first guy?
Moore, Poston, and Chris Kirk. Sorry.
Chris Kirk.
Yep.
Yeah, he was a difficult one for me. As you mentioned, just slid right outside. That cut line, I think if I had to go anywhere, it would be to JT Poston, who's a guy that I can't really quit. He's such an elite putter, and his irons are so, so bad. We've talked about on the show often, if he could just flip that, we're going to get results. Well, he had lost in six straight on the approach. He gained three strokes on the approach at Barbasol, and he lost in a playoff. That's all it takes for him. He's that good of a short game player. Now, I don't know if that's a flash in the pan or something he's clicked, but I have some interest there as a tournament play. I don't think he's a priority either. I'd prefer Lanto.
Yeah, Ryan Moore is also interesting. No doubt that he was going to be withdrawing after the T2. Like he said, back pain, but he did something similar last year where he withdrew from a major. I don't know. Maybe this guy just doesn't like to play in majors, doesn't care, or coincidental, maybe. I'm okay with Ryan Moore. I would rather pay up for Doug Gim or even go up to the loop list area. So I'm not going to say a dead range, but a little bit of an underweight for me here. The next guy that piques a little interest for me, and it's really because of the third place finish here last year, plus a made cut in 2019, it's Richie Werenski. Because I suspect he'll be about 1% owned this week, Ben. I think you can go something like 5%, have some leverage, and call it a day, given all of the names around him this week.
Yeah, I mean, this is where it starts to creep into. You're not going to have a ton of ownership on guys like that. The form is pretty bad, but you know, the change in venues, the change in style of golf can help some of these guys. I think that Joel Dahman's probably the obvious target just coming off at the Open. He made another cut. He's made 7 of 8. Seems pretty solid there at 7,500.
And just had a bad Sunday. Not to jump in, but he shot 3 rounds in the 60s Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
No, yeah, he kind of lost it on Sunday. He bogeyed the give me par 5 on the front. You just can't do that over there. What about Kyle Stanley? Talk about the guy who can't putt the most. Kyle Stanley, it's just ridiculous right now. He has done absolutely nothing. He has lost strokes, putting in 10 of 11 and 6 straight, but he's been immaculate tee to green, and he's made 7 straight cuts.
It's crazy how he can continue to do that. But this is the Kyle Stanley we have now. Does it end with a miscut, or does it end with gaining strokes putting in a top 10? That's kind of where we're at. I think he's one of the best values on the board because of that. I know that we're betting on something that hasn't happened in 10 rounds or 7 rounds, like you said, but if it does at 7,300, he's going to be one of the best values. I think back to Troy Merritt a couple of weeks ago, right? Same price range, 7,200, same with Cam Davis. Guys that you can look at his stats and say, if one thing clicks, he's in the top 10. Johnny Vegas is also in this range, 7,500. I think he's a great value. Do you think there's a little too much ownership on those two? Or do you think that because their prices aren't that much, they're playable? And the reason I ask is because last week I said to you, I'm fading Dan Berger at 7,400. And it's the wrong choice. He was inevitably good chalk at a good price. I think that's what I'm trying to pitch to you here this week with Vegas and Stanley.
Yeah, I think that it's tricky because depending on the lineup around them, I think in some circumstances it would be the wrong move because you've already got some chalky guys in there and you're not able to create that distance. Even if they play well, your margins are too thin. But on the whole, Kyle Stanley to me is more likely to flip the putter than to regress with the ball striking in a lot of ways. And I feel like Vegas, the way he's been driving it all year, he is one of the best players on tour off the tee, not of this field, just in general. He is up there with the best in the world in that category. So I get it. I think you still need to always leverage. I know we see time and time again this year where it's just like, oh my God, all this chalk is hitting. Yes, but there's still always some variation within these lineups, some leverage. And that's the part that you really want to focus and try to identify.
Yeah, 7,600, not to bounce back up, but let's talk about Mito Pereira for a second. This will be start number 4. First one ended with a miscut. The second one ended up with making the cut on the number and having a good weekend. Parlayed that into some good success. Top 5 at the Barbersol, or I think it was T5. Had a lot of names there at T5, a lot of names playing here this week. So Pereira, 7,600, does he pique your interest finally, or is it another wait and see? And playing a guy like Patrick Rogers, who also came in the top 5 last week and is playing some really good golf.
Yeah, I think I'm closer to going to Rogers just because we've got more of a long-term body of work, a better putter. The interesting thing about this Pereira guy, again, it's a small sample. He has not done anything with the putter yet.
Yeah,
he
lost even last week, right?
Even last week. So kind of feels like, all right, we're setting up a floor. And if he ever does gain a couple strokes putting, where are we going to end up? And that's something that I don't have a ton of apprehension going to him. It's more, how many guys do I really need here? So Rodgers is going to take some shares. I think people are going to go to Stricker. I'm not knocking that per se, but I don't really see it. To me, this range is more suited for pure upside rather than stability.
Would much rather go to Mito Pereira here this week. Patrick Rodgers on a golf course that Steve Stricker hasn't won four times, is not the career money leading winner, and didn't need a great back nine to get through the cut. Again, we haven't projected at 13% roughly right now. I will take the under and underweight on that all the time. I know I played him at the John Deere. I think it was just a product of that range. I liked him best this week. Not so much. You mentioned like Pereira losing strokes last week with the putter. Also losing strokes with the putter, who our chat just brought up, said he had an all-time performance last week. And let me tell you, it was pretty good. He gained 3.14 strokes tee to green on average, but yet still didn't win the golf tournament. But I can say that same thing about, guess who, Luke List. Gained 3.17 strokes tee to green and also didn't win the golf tournament. First guy is Sam Ryder. Ryder's had a pretty good season, Ben, and finally found some pretty good form. So is that the climax last week, or do we get a bigger top five here this week with more FedEx Cup points and all that?
I don't know what to make of this, because he talk about showing nothing. He came in second at Corrales at the end of March, and since then, he had played in 11 tournaments. His best finish was 52nd. He had seven missed cuts. He did nothing, and then he gained 11 strokes with his irons at Barbasol. I don't know what to do with that. It's very, very difficult. I think for me, I'll probably pass. Give me Sepp Straka. Give me, I'm not going to say EVR, even though he is a Minnesota guy in terms of his college, and he's missed another cut there. But, like, Chez is there.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about Chez, actually.
Are we making cuts?
Are we still in? I think we are, right?
Yeah. This is your train. I'm just along for the ride. When Chez is in form and he's reasonable price, he makes cuts at a very high clip. And when he gets off form, I tend to wait and see, because he can miss a lot of cuts in a row. So if you want to be different, you want to go putter heavy, Brendan Todd types are in this range. Hadwin.
How many strokes does Brendan Todd have to gain with the putter to come in the top 10 this week?
More than five, that's for sure. I mean,
15 probably.
It's ridiculous, though. These guys at these birdie fests, if they can just hold it together, I don't like to do that, because I think you're putting too much pressure. I'd rather go with someone who's a spike putter rather than a consistently good putter, to be honest. So not for me, but again, there's a lot of names. I've seen Bo Hoag's name brought up before, Shank's name. A lot of guys who you also have to keep in mind, it's the Barbasol. Like, a lot of guys are going to have a big time finish because there was no one else in that field.
It was pretty much all the guys were mentioning.
Yeah, everyone who played well is here. That's why they're here.
Yep. Shank being one of them, T15, but continues a actually really good stretch of not really good stretch, decent stretch. He had the T4 at the John Deere. Bo Hostler also playing pretty good. He had a T15 last week, has made four or five cuts. Brendan Hagee, he didn't play last week, but he has back-to-back top 20. So there's a lot of names there in that range. Who is your absolute favorite from 71 to 7,400?
71 to 74, it's no question, it's Kyle Stanley. Kyle Stanley, for me, he is playing consistently good golf. Long-term, he's a good player. He is just waiting on anything from the putter. And it will come. I know it's frustrating, but eventually they will flip the putter.
Brian Stewart in the expert picks article that I write that focuses on statistical analysis popped up in a couple of areas, and he is working off of back-to-back top 15s, a T8 at John Deere, has played well in these scoring events. So will he be mixed into your lineups here this week?
He's someone that, again, when I was kind of alluding to, I'd rather take a spike putter. He's kind of like that. When he gains, it tends to be a lot. When he loses, it's rare, but he loses a lot. I don't mind doing it. He's got to be I wish he was a little better off the tee. He has lost in 8 of 9 off the tee. Got to avoid the water. If he can get to the irons and the putting, though, there's worse plays than that. Not in the Stanley range, but also not crossed out of my player pool either.
Last one in our material building section that I want to talk about is, hold on 1 second, 6 straight missed cuts coming into the Barbasol last week. He sneaks through the cut line, going 69-70 in his first two rounds. And all of a sudden, he's on 59 watch. Shoots 60, vaults up the leaderboard, shoots 70 on Sunday to come in T5. I'm talking about James Hahn, who's using a local caddy. You know, just nothing was showing us that this was going to happen. So does that mean that it's continued success, or was this legitimate a flash in the pan, you know, gained 90,000 strokes with his putter on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, it happens. He found something off completely no form. I'm going to take you back. So 2016, James Hahn missed 8 straight cuts, and then he won Wells Fargo out of nowhere. He does that. I'm not going to chase it. He's just one of those type of players. There's no rhyme or reason, but I'm not going to try to, you know, infer that he's found something, because I don't think he has.
Yeah, it was 5.14 strokes putting on just Saturday alone. Pretty incredible there for James Hahn. Okay, let's go into the next section, where hopefully we don't need too many medical supplies when we're doing our construction. But if we do need a couple, Ben, we've got a couple of names down here that we can use in substitute. So first name I want to talk about is a guy that hasn't been playing all that well, but price looks pretty decent, at least down here at this level. It's Tom Lewis. You mentioned him at the top. He's a guy that we like to just eye on in these scoring fests because he can pop out of nowhere. So is he on your radar this week, or is the form really not good enough and there are a couple other guys around him?
Form's not great, but I will say Tom Lewis having made like 4 straight cuts is more than he usually does, because he's that volatile. He's automatic off the tee. Don't mind it. God, I looked at Russell Knox, Tom Hoagie. These games weren't really doing it for me. I also, Brandon Stone is here. Why is he here? That's makes no I like sense. That, but not playing him. Don't play him, people. I don't see a ton. I think that my first name that I wanted to ask you about is Penny On, who goes over and he finally makes a cut, and it's in the Open Championship. Now he comes back. Can he make enough putts? He's a notoriously awful putter, but we've talked about plenty of those today already.
Yeah, we certainly have. I think it's at least intriguing at 6,800 coming off a clear best start in his last 2 months at the Open. Maybe that's all he needs, right? Maybe that's all he needs to get going. I think I would probably rather, you know, play a couple of guys at the 6,900 range or even 7,000. I know that's, you know, a couple hundred dollars more expensive, or even just going down a bit. There's a guy at 6,600 that I played 2 weeks ago that I want to click again, because he showed me last week that his form is really close. It's Kevin Tway. It's 4 straight made cuts with now 3 straight starts above 87.5 DFS points. We get that again this week at 6,600, Ben, I'm going to love that. Even if the winning score is minus 20, he's going to help me in a single entry or those more limited entry contests.
Kevin Tway, you know, credit to you and other people who were picking up. He was 6,300, finding some form. He's starting to get there, but I think there's still a ton of value. If Kevin Tway plays like this, he's going to be in the mid sevens, low eights soon enough. This is a winner on tour. This guy can play. He just lost his game for a while, so no problem with that. Chat brought up KH Lee. I mean, you're going to get a lot of guys that have really murky form and they've got some upside. I don't think that I'm going to venture too much into those waters if I can avoid it, but no doubt about it that there are names, if you double up north of 10K, that you can land in this range.
Yeah. Is Camilo Villegas in play for you today? I know he's been a flash in the pan a couple of times this year, but we've at least made 3 straight cuts. Wasn't great last week though, so I don't feel like, you know, we need to get there.
I'm not really there, to be honest. It's not that I hate the play. I just, like you said, I don't see the need to really do it. Will Gordon, who is someone I wanted to look, but I don't see it. I'll be honest. I'd rather play Keith Mitchell blindly. Certainly would rather play Kevin Tway. What about your boy Austin Eckroat?
Yeah. So, all right. You mentioned Keith Mitchell, by the way. Since that nice little run, you know, where the T3 at the Wells Fargo, we have done nothing since then. So maybe it's time for him to kind of break out of that slump a little bit. Austin Eckroat. Yeah. He had a nice couple of starts when he first broke out. We know that he's, you know, played with some big time players and he was very good at Oklahoma State. The problem is that I feel like these guys are trying to compare themselves to Morikawa because they were competing against him a couple of years ago. And maybe they're putting too much pressure on, you know, John Pach cannot make a cut even at the Barbasol last week. Ekroth struggled to make the cut at the TPC Colorado and the Korn Ferry Tour. I don't know. At 6,600, if he makes the cut, if anybody makes the cut at this range, I think they're going to provide value given the course. Definitely. So if Ekroth can find it for a week, sure, we know he can. We know he's done it on the PGA Tour already on, you know, down at OHL Mayakoba. Maybe this is a similar course. I don't think so. I think it plays more wide open. We'll see. Wait and see on Ekroth. I'd rather play Tway at the same price.
Same. I'd rather play Duffner as well. Chat just brought that him up. Again, there's a million guys in this field that are striking it really well and not putting. Do you want to put six of them on the same team? Absolutely not, because the chances that six bad putters are all going to flip the same week, it's very, very low. But sprinkling a couple in on a lot of lineups is a strategy that I really think can pay dividends at a course like this.
Duffner, that's actually a pretty good call on Duffner there. He has been striking it well. And if you strike it well for 2 days, you're probably going to make the cut here. A couple of more guys that we can talk about down in this range, getting a start. Norman Jeong, I'm just glad to see him back in a field. He Monday qualified. Here's a guy that came out of school 2 years ago, was the, you know, Naismith Award winner, whatever they call it for golf, the Jack Nicklaus Award, the Van Hogen Award, Haskins, all of that, and didn't make a cut on the PGA Tour. Maybe the 2 years away from the game or away from PGA Tour will get him going again, but I'm not banking on it. That's for sure. As we move down here, this guy I wanted to ask you about, he doesn't pop up much, but he has made an incredible amount of cuts in a row on both the Korn Ferry Tour and the PGA Tour. In fact, you'd have to go all the way back to March to find a missed cut. It's Wes Roach. I know I'm digging deep here, 6,300, but if we're looking for a guy to get us through the line, is he it?
So it's weird. Yeah, Wes Roach at John Deere was someone I looked at a little bit, and he's just doing what he's doing. So it's a two-way street. He's making more cuts, but he never does anything with them. He keeps coming in like 50th.
Almost like Vincent Whaley, kind of.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. It definitely feels good to get your guys through. And if you get 6 of 6, we all know that's the key to the game. But when you're really talking about it, when let's get down to it, and you've certainly won your fair share of big-time tournaments, and when you're in the hunt, you really need everyone giving you placement points at the end of the day. Now, he can outscore, and he can provide streaks and bonuses and things like that. But even if he's coming in 47th, yes, it's better than having 5 of 6, but I'd rather probably incur more risk and have more top 25 equity than top 50 equity, if that makes sense.
Yep, I think so. We've got, again, we're going to be going, you know, a little deep here because it's a very top heavy field, as we've mentioned a few times before. One of the ones that has come out this year, Quade Cummins, you kind of mentioned at the top, he's part of that PGA Tour U graduating class. And I think he may have been like 10th or something like that. So he has status on the Form Tour, which is kind of like the McKenzie Tour of this year, which, sure, we've actually seen plenty of golfers come out of the McKenzie Tour and make it all the way here, right? Mackenzie Hughes is one of them, actually. Not that the tour is named after him, but it should
might
be.
Might as well be.
Might as well be after the recent performances from him. And after he wins an Olympic gold, it'll really be named after him. Anyways, that's for next week, the Olympics. Stay tuned for that, of course.
Just cancel the Olympics now.
No, please. Please don't. But Quade Cummins, 2 top 5s on that Form Tour. This is a big step up. Are you going to click his name once this week?
No. It's not that these guys can't do it. It's just, to me, an unnecessary risk. If he has a miracle showing, you're not in trouble. It's just you didn't take advantage of it, and that's fine. If he doesn't, which is the most likely thing, you're going to be way behind the eight ball. I am going to ask you a question that has nothing to do with this tournament as we round out, because you've mentioned a lot of guys feeding in from a lot of different tours.
Yeah.
What happened to Ryan Ruffles? You remember him?
Yeah, he was playing on the Korn Ferry Tour, and I thought he had won an event and kind of broken through, but maybe he's just caddying for his sister.
I don't know. Chad, this is the hard-hitting analysis you came here for. I know
I think he's caddying for his sister. If I was him, I'd be caddying for his sister because she's got some real time game. She's going to be turning pro or has very soon. The last stats we have from him is a withdrawal at TPC Colorado.
That's so unfortunate. I always liked that guy.
Yeah. Talented golfer. Cam Davis kind of left him.
Yeah,
left him in the wings there. They're both the same age. Both, that's, you know, both Australian products, and Cam Davis obviously just left them behind there. All right. Just maybe a couple of more guys that I wanted to mention that graded out well. Roger Sloan is a guy that has played well both off the tee and on his approaches recently. 6,900, maybe a little bit too pricey, but made four or five cuts. Again, I think there's probably guys that we've already talked about that are better, but a guy I wanted to bring up nonetheless.
Yeah, I think this is where you really have to sort through, put these golfers in different buckets from really aggressive to really safe, of course, relative to the range. There's no such thing as safety in golf tournaments, as we all know, but, and then try to mix and match. And that is where, you know, just as Jason talks about all the time, our pro plays, our tools, they can help sort some of that information. They can give insight into how we and Alex and Max, the whole team, Jeff, we're kind of allocating our player pools, because in a field like this, there are so many flyers that you don't want to play all of them. But at the same time, you can't just say, oh, the 6K range is terrible, I'm just going to forget about them. That would be a mistake as well.
Yeah. And chat's got a lot of good points here that I'm running through. We, Ben and I both want Bud Cauley back in our life as well. We don't know where this guy is. Also Greg letting us know to remind everybody else to, of course, like, and also subscribe here to our channel. Not only are we putting out this, but we've got short form videos and content coming out daily from both Ben and I, and Ben and joins up with Josh for the Contenders Bet every so often. So great way to get notified is subscribe. And also, if you cannot stand to look at our faces, which I totally get. Listen, I even got my hair cut because chat was making fun of the mop on top of my head. Well, listen, a great way to avoid all that, check us out on your favorite podcast channel. We have all of our shows up on there. Plus, if you leave a 5-star review, you're going to be eligible to win some Osmo Plus stuff going on. And reviews, as long as it's a 5-star, are eligible for up to a year. What do you got to do? Leave your Osmo username or your Twitter handle, and you'll be eligible. So a great way to do it. All right, Ben, let's wrap this up. We already gave our top candidate for a withdrawal. We both agree with Louis Oosthuizen. So let's give our top candidate for a win. Do you think it's going to come from somebody that is $9,000 priced or above on DK? Or do you think we get an against the grain winner this week? Let's start with that. And then I'll give you who I think is going to win.
Well, it looked like I was wondering if you were frozen. It looked like I was frozen, but I'm back. Don't worry. Okay. I'm not going to duck out on you now.
Okay. I hope not. Jeez. Okay.
I think that Sergio is a fantastic bet because I like 35-1.
Okay.
I know this is the kiss of death. Everyone in the world's been trying this for years, but Tony Finau to me is in a really good spot. I know it's, he can't win and it's warranted. This guy's got too much talent just to have one. And I think he's more likely to add another or two easier tournament before he gets a major or something. And I think this could be a week where Tony Finau really does show up.
Okay. I love that. I also wanted to bring up one other guy, Cam Champ. I think he's on the mend after he finally gained strokes putting 2 weeks ago at the John Deere. We know his ball striking and specifically off the tee game is elite. So love to see that. I'll be playing him this week, but I got the winner for you.
Oh boy.
I got him.
MJ Defoe.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of close to that at this point. A guy that I believe is going to make waves on the PGA Tour and is just coming into his talent. Probably the biggest debate of the week. It's going to be Bobby McIntyre. He's going to win. He's going to take the Garrett Hego route. He's going to win this week and join the ranks of the PGA Tour. And that is where we'll end it. Ben, Garrett Hego, he will be in the field for the Olympics next week. That's where we are headed. But we've got you and Eric tomorrow night, right?
Absolutely. Back in business. And certainly, if we didn't get to your guy, if something changes, at DFS Golfer 23, at Jazzrez DFS, and of course, in our premium Slack chat, one of the many reasons to get behind the paywall. Me and Jason are in there. We're talking. We've got a great community chat. I know a lot of you guys are already in there, but if you're not, come and hop in. It's a really good time and really, really informative.
There you have it, guys. We'll see you next week for the 60-man field at the Olympics. Until then, good luck at the 3M Open, and we'll see you on the other side. I'll be